from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. On Monday of this week, President Trump revealed his long-awaited plan to invest in American infrastructure, calling it the biggest and boldest in American history. The administration says they will invest $200 billion over the next decade, which is intended to spur $1.5 trillion in spending. How will California fare under the plan? Well, a year ago this month, Governor Brown's office submitted a $100 billion wish list of projects to rebuild crumbling roads and bridges and to modernize transit and water systems. With most of the burden of paying for those projects in local hands, how much can California do? Joining me to talk about it is Sean Randolph, Senior Director of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you. And Randy Rentschler is here in studio as well. He's Director of Legislation and Public Affairs at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you.
Well, I'm still kind of processing from the last segment, but we do have to go on and talk about news here. And let me begin with you, Randy, because you've been very vocal in your criticism of the president's plans and particularly how they'll affect us here in California and affect a lot of transportation projects in particular. I think you called it a pittance.
Yeah, I did. I guess I regret it. I should have called the plan kind of more pitiful than anything else. There's no doubt that infrastructure is the basis of the strong economy, the high-income jobs that we have in this country and has been for decades and decades. And I think we're all looking forward to a real plan to address the decades of neglect on our system, not just highways, not just transit, but waterways and everything. And I think what we got here was a plan without a center. It has some things on the edges that are good, some reforms that are needed on process, some introduction of new money if we can get it from the private sector. But the core thing we need in this country is to maintain the system we have to address the congestion that people face every day, to address the rebuild we need of BART and other systems, and this plan lacks any of that.
Well, I think you've sort of hit on what a lot of the criticism has been, and we'll hear more positive things from Sean Randolph, but the idea is supposedly maybe to help, let me just focus on transportation for a moment, to help us get BART to San Jose or to get high-speed rail, and we don't necessarily see that in the offing from this.
Well, in fact, it's worse than that because on the budget that was released the same exact day, this administration is proposing to eliminate the very program that would fund BART to San Jose. That is the program that brought BART to the San Francisco International Airport. So you are seeing a little bit of a, you know, here's a thing that doesn't have a center, that doesn't have a real proposal. And by the way, we're taking away the things you need the most. And Michael, just to add, this amount of money, $20 billion a year, is the basics of what the Highway Trust Fund needs just to maintain the system we have in the state of disrepair we have it. It would not improve the system at all. So we have this enormous backlog of projects. And this $20 billion, if just dumped into the core programs that we have already, would barely move the needle.
Well, I was saying before, and just like you to comment on this before I go to Sean Randolph, that a lot of this money was actually earmarked for small populated rural areas. In other words, the metropolitan areas are, I think by any standards, getting short shrift here in terms of this money.
Look, I think that's one of the reasons why I characterize this the way I do is, look, it's pitiful with respect to the money. It's pitiful with respect to the politics by trying to divide this country between the metros and the rural areas. There is no question that rural America could use all of this money and more to address issues that matter to them. I think the key is to try to get a program that's substantive enough. That looks like what we did in the 50s and 60s when the U.S. government led the construction of the interstate system, one of the finest public works projects in the history of the world. And instead, what we have is kind of a program that doesn't do any of those things, but was sold as this great, huge investment. And it's not. If it was sold for what it is, a modest increase in federal commitment of money, helping rural areas with some help on the sides with respect to making the process go well, look, that would be one thing. But it's been sold as this transformational investment, and it's just simply not that.
Now, let me go to Sean Randolph, who, again, is Senior Director of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. Sean, do you see this? I mean, the Bay Area Council has sort of been applauding this. A lot of private-public partnerships and good for the infrastructure.
Well, I wouldn't say we applaud it, Michael, and I agree with a lot of what Randy just had to say. It's pretty clear that the $200 billion over 10 years is inadequate. It's spread over a long period of time. And by the way, that's not just for transportation. That covers all infrastructure. So you look at transportation, it's even less.
And what about water projects?
Yeah. Our bill is enormous, and so this barely makes a dent in it. And by shifting so much of the burden to local governments, I think it really puts a strain where we can't afford to put a lot more strain right now. However, I think it would be a mistake to dismiss it out of hand. There are some good things in there that are worth considering. We've been writing at the Institute for a decade now about how we in California can make greater use of public-private partnerships to accelerate building infrastructure. And to be clear, that's not privatization. It's actually contractual arrangements with private investors and developers who can finance, build, and operate infrastructure on a contract. It never leaves public hands. But it can accelerate building. It can save a lot of money over time. So we think this is worth considering. Why not? The other thing we think is positive in it is the idea we're going to streamline the regulatory process so more can get built faster, consistent with high environmental standards. So, again, I don't think we should just dismiss the whole thing. It's not worth considering. I think we should look at what may be useful in it and not stop there. You know, this is going to be discussed in Congress. This is like an opening gambit. Nothing's going to happen without bipartisan support. The president's going to need Democrats. So, is this the answer to much of anything? No, but there are a few good things we could look at, and if we can get some more federal money on the table and leverage it, let's see the best way to do that.
Well, at the risk of sounding like the agent of negativity here, but I have to ask, especially when you put the emphasis on private, doesn't that mean more tolls and more passenger fees?
No, not necessarily. And by the way, there are toll roads, and people identify public-private partnerships with toll roads. Public-private partnerships have been used to build the new Long Beach Courthouse. They're going to be used to double the size of the UC Merced campus. They're used for lots and lots of different things. Actually, half the Presidio Parkway from the Golden Gate Bridge into the city is a public-private partnership, and there's no toll. So I think we need to get away from the idea that it's just about toll roads.
And the concern about local governments being in this when they're grappling with all the tax code changes of the Trump administration?
Well, you know, on that one, I would say that this is not a news story. The share of federal support in capital projects for transportation has been going down and down for years. And we in California, especially at the county level, have been taking on more of that burden. Most of our counties here in Northern California in the Bay Area have passed sales tax increases in order to fund transportation in their jurisdictions. And we're going to do more of that. So it is the trend. There are some places that can't do it. What I would say, Michael, though, we do have an important opportunity coming up to really help ourselves and not get hung up on what the federal government may or may not choose to do, which is Regional Measure 3, going to be on the ballot in June, $4.5 billion across the Bay Area with some operating funding on top of that. And that's going to put funding toward things like BART extensions, more ferries, congestion lanes. There's a lot of infrastructure in that package that we can start to build and address right now. And I think whatever may happen in Washington, we really need to get RM3 passed.
Well, there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be addressed in general. And I know listeners may want to weigh in on this. We're talking about highways and transit systems, dams, airports, national parks, and indeed the whole gambit. Let's hear from your I'd like to hear your thoughts about essentially what you think this is going to do, the president's infrastructure plan. We're talking about it's a new infrastructure plan, which certainly has impact here in the Bay Area. Sean Randolph here in studio with us, senior director of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, and Randy Rentschler, also here in studio, director of legislation and public affairs at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. If you'd like to weigh in, if you have questions or comments, we want to hear from you. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. What do you think about the president's infrastructure plan, and especially in terms of local and California impact? We do want to hear from you. Again, you can join us now, 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Jake writes, is the White House pushing for an infrastructure plan as another way to reinvigorate pork barrel politics on Capitol Hill? Is having that money available just a way to get senators and representatives on board for other bills? Anybody want to opine on that? Randy?
Well, you know, look, the ban on earmarking has had a plus and a minus in Washington, D.C. You know, everyone has vilified it a little bit, and for a good reason sometimes. But in this case, I think not. I think a program like this, again, which is so difficult to measure because there's very little details in it. Look, I think the big message...
A lot of it's pretty vague, actually.
Look, it's completely vague, but there is a big message here. And one of the big messages is that places like California, the Bay Area, we're very much on our own if we want to solve our own problems. The California State Legislature took a huge step toward a decades-long backlog to fix our local streets and roads last year. That needs to be continued. We do need to look at local measures to the maximum extent we can if people hope to have a resolution, because it's clear that, like, this White House, this Congress, and for decades have not been able to come to terms with it.
Quick question before I go to Sean here. Noel wants to know, does the plan actually allot money for public transit?
It does not. No, not at all. In fact, again, the budget, which came out on the exact same day, removes billions of dollars of commitment to public transit on the exact same moment. So you need to look at both sides, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul in this case.
Thoughts from you, Sean Randolph, on this?
No, I agree that we have to look at what the net benefit is of the federal funding. And if you take money out of one program that is a well-known program that funds large capital projects for transportation, perhaps to pay for this other program, you've got to ask, where does that actually bring us in the end? So that is definitely not helpful.
But you do have some, well, optimistic attitude toward this, Sean. What are you basing that on?
Well, I'm not going to say optimistic. I think it's very problematic whether the Congress is going to do anything. Bipartisan, looking at the budget, the deficit, there's a lot of reasons why I don't think we can be very optimistic about what's going to come out of Congress either. Whether it's this plan or another plan. But where I think the opportunity is people are talking about infrastructure. I think there's a broad recognition, hopefully bipartisan, people have been waiting for this plan for a long time, that we've woefully underinvested in infrastructure in this country for a really long time, and that includes California, and we're seeing the implications of that. It's costing our economy. And we have to turn that around. And so, yeah, we are investing more at the local and state level because we have to. The federal government has been backing off for a long time. And the positive things, where, again, I'm not saying this makes for a great plan, but the positive things that I think are on the table now that deserve to be looked at are, how can we get more private expertise, private finance at the table helping to build and operate infrastructure selectively? Maybe only 20% of infrastructure projects even lend themselves to that. But
what do you think our priorities ought to be here?
Well, I'd say that this has been done across the world. The UK, Canada, Australia, a lot of countries have done this much better than we have. They're using it to build schools. They're using this kind of method to build universities, to build roads, public facilities of all kinds. It can be applied in a lot of ways. So, again, I don't want to exaggerate the point to say it's the solution to infrastructure. It's not, but it's part of the solution, and having it on the table for debate is a good thing. And as I mentioned before, regulatory streamlining, having that on the table for debate is a good thing. It adds a lot of cost, a lot of time to the system. Some of that is necessary, a lot is unnecessary. And if we can start to resolve those two questions, we can at least move the needle some.
Well, let's hear from our listeners about not only moving the needle, but what you find as a priority when you think about infrastructure. As I said to Randy Rentschler just a moment ago, he confirmed my sense that the language is pretty vague. I'll give you an example of that. Transformative projects to lift the American spirit. I'm not sure what that means, but, you know, maybe you can infer some meaning from it. Again, you can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Here's a listener who writes, I speculate that some Republican leaders believe that climate change is real and significant, but don't care or even cheer it on because they really hate the coastal cities. Let me get some callers on. Let me begin with Michael from Martinez. Michael, you're on the air.
Good morning. Appreciate the show. It's like having coffee with a friend every morning. The Golden Gate Bridge was built with private funds, if I recall. There were bonds sold, and the unions, retirement, and investors would gladly buy up those type of bonds at a good rate, payable over 30 years. And with the increase in commerce and all, with better roads and technology, I think it would reap itself. So bonds could be set up and sold. And as far as technology, Walt Disney had the City of the Future in 62 with electric monorail and everything. So Mickey Mouse was ahead of everybody in California. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Michael. Randy, you wanted to respond to Michael.
Well, look, the Golden Gate Bridge was a classic public project. It was a state-created public agency that, as Michael mentioned, issued bonds that built the investment. So, look, we do that every day. That's how the Richmond-San Rafael Bridge was rehabilitated. That's how the Carquinez Bridge was done. The agency I work for issued all those bonds. That's radically different than what the proposal is by this administration. So, and, you know, as far as Disneyland, look, it's Disneyland.
Let me read a comment from George who says, what infrastructure plan? You're being unnecessarily generous referring to this as a plan. Let me go to another caller here, and that's Frank. Frank, you're on the air.
Good morning, Michael. Let me start with a quick swipe at the public-private issue. One of your panel members talked about England. He should mention that the largest private investor in those shared projects just went bankrupt about 2 weeks ago. But the issue that I'd like to ask the panel about, if you guys ran the zoo, how would you allocate monies between the non-gaudy job of fixing the water pipes and the water transmission system that's costing us, what, 40% in leakage, versus the highly visible congestion lane, et cetera, projects that the private investors might be willing to fund?
Well, Frank, you put your finger on the whole problem with triage here. Sean, I go to you on this? Sean?
So with the public-private partnerships, it does happen if a private partner goes bankrupt or exits a project. It's still in public hands. Actually, they get the asset back. So it's the private partner that loses. The public actually tends to gain, if anything, when those things happen. The other thing about the private partnerships is they're not for everything because, guess what, it's not free money. The private party has to make a profit on it, and so that lends itself to some things and not to others. But it did happen, say, the Presidio Parkway from the one end of the Golden Gate Bridge. The old one was falling down, and the public money wasn't there to complete the whole thing. They did part of it. And it's probably going to show it saved hundreds of millions of dollars. So I think there's something to be said there. I think we need to distinguish, though, sometimes some of the core fundamental infrastructure. 80% of infrastructure, I think, has got to be public money. You know, the private thing, it's really important. It's a fraction of the whole. At the end, there's no substitute for the government investing what it needs to invest.
Now, as long as we're talking about money, let me read a comment from a listener who writes, you need to remind folks that California sends tax money to D.C. and doesn't get it back. Otherwise, it sounds like you are just left coasters whining about not getting free money from the government. Sean?
Can I add one thing, Michael? One of your callers referenced climate change. Well, this is another big bill coming up, and you ask what priorities are, and obviously everybody who lives in the Bay Area and tries to move around
is not a priority to this federal administration, I'm afraid.
Well, for us here in California, the Bay Area, I think we know our priorities, and mobility and transportation are right at the top of the list. So I think voters are really focused on improving transportation. But if we look longer down the road, and it's not that far down the road, we know that rising sea levels are going to have a significant toll on our infrastructure. A lot of low-lying land, high-value properties and facilities, water treatment plants, things like that, highways around the bay. We're going to need to address that sooner or later. And just looking at the Embarcadero rebuild along San Francisco's shoreline, that's going to be a multi-billion-dollar project accelerated by rising sea levels. And so I think when we talk about infrastructure investment, we have to remember we're going to have to add managing the adaptation to climate change to the bill.
Sean Randolph, again, is Senior Director of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, and Randy Rentschler is also with us, Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for the MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, and our next caller is Steve from San Jose. Steve, you're on.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Okay, so I have a question, I guess. The state government seems to be putting a whole lot of effort into this multi-billion-dollar high-speed rail system, which I admit is sexy, and, you know, it is beautiful to think about. But if we took those many, many, spending billions of dollars and put it into buying electric buses and increasing our infrastructure and transportation ability inside our major cities so that we could get many more people out of cars and actually move them efficiently, I think that'd be money much better spent. And we do a lot of things that I think don't make a lot of sense, and that's one of them.
Well, we're talking about what, Randy, here, $64 billion as a crow flies now,
right,
with high-speed rail. What about the caller's point?
Well, look, Steve has a good point on a couple of things. Everyone has their own view about what the priorities ought to be in this state. I think the state, through a series of actions last year, the state legislature prioritized the two things that matter most. One is the aging pains of this state. The roads and infrastructure were built after the war, and it's past time to replace them. And the state addressed that through Senate Bill 1. They also are trying to deal with the growing pains in this state, the fact the economy is strong and we have to have mobility and our ability to do it simply with just cars and airplanes is limited. I think the fact of the matter is, if you look around the world, most countries did not go in on just cars and airplanes. They also have a rail system that connects not just intercity, like the city itself, like BART, but also high-speed rail that connects major metropolitans to each other. So you can be on rail inside the city, you can get on rail to go to another city. Los Angeles is beginning to come to terms with this by bringing back their system. Look, we need a society that has more than just planes and cars. This is a retrofit of a series of past mistakes that were made generations ago. There's no doubt that it's expensive, but we got to match our growing pains with our aging pains in order to succeed, and the state is focused on that.
Let me go to a comment here and get your response, Sean Randolph. Rick writes, wouldn't public works projects be more economical if they were open to non-union bids? If so, I wonder if there are any studies about the potential differences in cost.
In many cases, perhaps. I think one of the things that you need to look at in all of these projects is the labor component. It's been a point of debate in a lot of public-private partnerships, and I think it's something where when those things are done, they need to be worked out in a way that basically is completely, you know, fair and does not in any way disadvantage labor. So it makes it a little bit more complicated. But I don't think that I think you'd have to be specific about the project to say where non-union labor would lower costs or not.
Comment from Wynn. Since California sends more tax money to Washington than it receives in infrastructure support, wouldn't we be better off just keeping that tax money and using it to fund our own infrastructure plans? It's a radical idea. Let me read another comment from Bob, who said, forget Trump's paltry plan. The Bay Area Council and Silicon Valley Leadership Group need to justify why their big tech patrons are passing the increased cost of infrastructure onto Bay Area small businesses and people by advocating for an exorbitant bridge toll increase. Have Facebook and Google pay for it, and that will be leadership. Sean Randolph?
Well, I'd say companies like Facebook and Google are enormous sources of employment and economic dynamism here. I think it's really misplaced to blame private companies for congestion. I think a lot of the blame, if we're going to play that game, goes on the failure of the public sector to adequately invest in infrastructure over many, many decades. And frankly, in the public sector, the failure to approve enough housing over many, many decades to accommodate the people who live here and the people who want to live here. We wouldn't have an issue of congestion. We wouldn't have an issue, or at least not to the same extent, of high housing costs if, in fact, governments across the Bay Area had been addressing these topics adequately over decades. So, you know, I think it's misplaced to put the burden or the blame for that on the private sector. That said, a lot of technology companies and other companies are investing in housing. They're very concerned about congestion because it infects them and their employees too.
Did you say affects or infects?
I'm sorry. It affects them and their employees too. So I think they're very much at the table and in the game helping people in government and both the private sector find a solution.
I wasn't necessarily looking for a correction. I think it may have been an interesting Freudian slip. Let me get another caller on here, though. Tom joins us. Tom, you're on.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for the conversation. My question is about BART and Caltrain on the peninsula, and if they work together or if they're more adversaries and kind of trying to grab land and build on their own.
Randy Renshaw.
Well, look, Tom's on an interesting point. We have, what, 26, 28 transit operators here in the Bay Area. It's kind of a unique setup. You know, often places like Chicago might have one major one and a couple small ones. So, look, separate agencies do tend to compete. They do tend to do that. But, look, we have what we have. And to their credit, they also coordinate where they can. My agency, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, is the operator of the Clipper card. So, look, we're trying to overcome this big challenge, but Tom points out a fair criticism that we have a unique setup here in the Bay Area.
And we'll get your weighing in on this, Sean Randolph.
I agree. And it's really endemic to local government in the Bay Area generally, where we have so many agencies that just coordinating them and getting them to work together on a regional basis is really difficult. And so, for example, when we pass our sales tax measures, they're county by county, but they stop at the county line. That's why we think passing Regional Measure 3 this June is really important, because a lot of this expenditure has to be done on a cross-county basis. It has to be strategic from a regional perspective. We're knitting the region together more closely. Most commuters in the area cross county lines when they're commuting, and we need to address that through a better regional strategy and regional investment.
Well, we need a lot of regional strategies and investment. It occurs to me that just to maintain what we have in terms of infrastructure is extraordinarily costly. And, you know, I don't know if this is a pittance or if Sean says it's maybe an harbinger of some good work between private and public partnerships, but I certainly hope that it can be put to some good uses. And I thank both of you for being with us on this segment of Forum. Randy Rentschler, again, is Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, the Transportation Planning, Coordinating, and Financing Agency for the nine-county San Francisco Bay Area. Thanks for being with us, Randy.
It's my pleasure.
And Sean Randolph, again, a Senior Director of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Michael.
And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. Max Boot is up ahead in the hour ahead. Stay tuned for that. And KQED's Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauber, Susan Britton, Katie Springer. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer today is Steve, and our engagement producer is Amanda. And we get online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Lisa Arbutman and Allie Wallner. Our managing editor is Ethan Lindsay. Executive producer is Holly Kernan. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, thank you for being a part of the program this morning. I'm Michael Krasny.